Hello and welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry, she's Emma Bunnell, and we're both here. Our
Hello.
computers are working and we're feeling very smug about having Macs.
Absolutely.
We're recording on Friday as the world internet melts down. If you can't watch your favourite programme or read your favourite website or whatever, what better thing to do than listen to us? Because it's been a very interesting week in British politics. I think generally another good one for Keir Starmer, but obviously a couple of things we need to unpack. I guess we should start on, forgive me, on the negative side. He's lost his Welsh First Minister, Vaughan Gething. It was really great, actually. You had on your Hard Thinking on the Soft Left Substack, which, by the way, if you sign up at patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, you get that included in it. From a gentleman called David Collins explaining what had happened in Welsh Labour and the Senate, which I found very useful. Give us a quick précis about what's happened.
So essentially, there ever since Vaughan Gething was very narrowly elected, as I understand it, as the leader of Welsh Labour and therefore the First Minister of the Senedd, Welsh Sheriff. I don't know if it's called First Minister because that's Scottish Parliament and they have different powers.
I believe it is. I believe it is the First Minister.
There have been rumblings under, and two big things, the first of which was he accepted a, I think it was £200,000 donation to his leadership campaign from somebody who had previously been committed of an environmental crime. And that was considered not good, as you can imagine. And then the next one was he sacked a minister who he believed had leaked a WhatsApp conversation. I think her name's Hannah Blethyn. The paper who did the reporting have since said that she was not the source. But it is the case, I believe, that the source was a screenshot of her WhatsApps.
Goodness, this is messy.
So it's all very, very messy. She's never accepted that it was her who leaked. And as I say, now the paper has said it wasn't her who leaked, but what was leaked was her WhatsApps. So,
yeah, and also paper needs to be very careful about revealing its sources.
Yeah, that seemed very odd to me. I mean, I don't suppose they revealed their sources. They said this wasn't our source, but
yeah, you still have to be very careful.
But yeah,
but
essentially, what there isn't that much political difference between Vaughan Gething and Jeremy Miles, and when there isn't that much political difference, it all becomes very petty and personal. And I think that's what's happened here, according to the piece that I published by David Collins. And so people just didn't accept the result, really. And now they're going to have to do it all over again because so basically there was a vote of no confidence in Vaughan Gething. That was lost by, I think, one vote, and two Labour AMs didn't vote because they were off sick.
Right.
But they were very particular people who didn't vote and were off sick. So I think one of them was the woman who was sacked for leaking. I need to double check that, but I think that's the case. And but that's non-binding, basically.
But quite hard to come back from.
But very difficult to come back from. And then this week, four of the cabinet in the Senedd resigned, and that just means that it would be almost impossible for Vaughan Gething to pass a budget.
Yeah. There were some really interesting points in the piece by David, you know, who's from a mixed ethnicity, Vaughan Gething. So his dad's a Welsh doctor of medicine. His mum was a black Zambian woman. So he's the only BME person to have occupied a representative office beyond councillor in the history of Welsh Labour. And obviously it was quite a big deal at the time when he was elected because you didn't have David Lammy in office. Now, obviously, the Foreign Secretary, so on and so forth. So it was quite a big moment for Labour.
Yeah, he was the first BME leader of any nation in Europe.
Right, yes, I remember that. It was a huge moment, wasn't it?
So
I think we mentioned it on the show.
It was a big moment. He's also, interestingly, which David goes into in the piece.
Well, hang on, he was the first black leader of any nation in Europe. He obviously wasn't the first from a minority leader.
Sorry, you're absolutely right. Of course, Rishi Sunak
was the prime minister at the time.
Yeah, first black leader. You're right. But he's also the first non-Welsh speaker.
Fascinating.
To become the leader of the Welsh Senedd. And had been quite strong right down to his university years about the fact that Welsh speakers were not discriminated against in the same way that BME people were, which Plaid Cymru
took
a lot of exception to.
And how interesting.
They've been long out to get him.
Mm. I guess the question I really have to ask you is, does this have any impact on Keir Starmer? No. Was he an ally? Does it sort of make life a little bit difficult for Keir Starmer? I haven't seen much fallout.
So I think the previous Senedd leader was more of a Corbynite.
Right.
But both candidates were probably more Starmerites in this election. And I suspect that whoever comes in will be similar.
Right. Interesting. And so let's jump back to Westminster, because it was the King's Speech. It was the first Labour's King. Well, it was the first King's Speech in decades, of course. Although Prince Charles had delivered a couple.
No, Rishi Sunak had one King's Speech, because I remember everyone talking about whether he dropped the green stuff with a sneer or
goodness,
not.
Yeah. And King Charles, when he was Prince Charles, did represent his mother. Yeah. So it wasn't the first time he had delivered this. But it's the first Labour's King's Speech in decades. A decade and a half. How did you feel about having that delivered?
I mean, it was great. It was a very good speech, I thought. I mean, not the speech, it was very bog standard.
Yeah.
But the stuff in it, I'm pretty excited by. Lots of kind of hitting the ground running in terms of Labour's more difficult projects, which I think is the right political approach. So all the planning stuff being front-loaded, I think, is really important, because if they don't do that now, they are going to have NIMBYs, going at them for ages over these projects. So the earlier you can do that, getting the pain out of the way and get the houses bloody built, the better.
Can we just, sorry, talking of NIMBYs, can we just have a giggle at the Green Party?
Oh, my God.
But just for a moment, this is one of the political things you and I can both unite on almost unequivocally. Carla Denyer, the leader of the Green Party who got elected into Parliament, is opposing on NIMBY grounds a great big green investment project.
As is her co-leader, the one whose name we can never remember.
The male one,
who's saying that pylons shouldn't be built that would allow us to use offshore wind.
I had to have a giggle at the Greens. I'm sorry, I did.
I mean, they're just so ridiculous.
So we had that. I'm very pro anti NIMBY, very pro building houses. So I can agree with that. Obviously, this is a bit of a funny one, the King's Speech. Straight after a general election, because essentially we knew what it was going to say because we'd read the manifesto, right? There wasn't anything too revelatory in it. We didn't have a sort of independence of the Bank of England moment in it.
No.
It was basically King Charles reading out the bits of the manifesto.
And they decided not to do a budget because part of what they've set out is this fiscal responsibility bill, which means that everything has to be checked by the OBR, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I.e. we're not Liz Truss.
Yeah.
And having done that, they just wouldn't have the time to do a budget before the autumn.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I saw Rachel Reeves talking. She tweeted about sort of no government can, do X, Y, Z. Well, of course, a government can't bind its successor, or no parliament can bind its successor, which is a kind of interesting framing.
I mean, they can bind them in that any successor would have to overturn that legislation.
Yes.
And can you imagine being the person who says we're going to overturn the fiscal responsibility legislation?
right. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's politically binding and there's legislatively binding.
I'm going to be the Conservative Chancellor that overturns the fiscal responsibility legislation. Yeah, not probably the look the next Conservative Chancellor, whoever he or she may be.
Liz Truss has taken it really well and behaved with complete dignity.
All right, we're going to do it. Let's take a pause and head to Milwaukee. What is going on? I have no problem. So I saw people taking a pop at Nigel Farage for being there. I actually have no problem with this. I hate having to defend Nigel Farage. But frankly, MPs are allowed to go on international trips. They're not local councillors. He was there for the King's speech. I sort of don't object to him being there for a few days. If it keeps happening from now until November, I might have a different view. In fact, I will have a different view. But I don't have a problem at the moment. Liz Truss, Jesse off there. Her determination to stay relevant after the indignity of being a former prime minister to lose their seat is quite something to behold.
Well, ironically, it wasn't Liz Truss going to the Republican convention. Could I give a shit? No, I could not.
No. And nor could many, most people at the Republican convention.
No, I mean,
from what I
interestingly,
could tell.
Both her and Boris Johnson,
yes,
like, spoke to empty rooms from what's being, yeah, reported.
Yeah.
No, it was more that she's like, oh, you named me in this legislation and the Green Book or whatever. And it's like, oh, how dare you be so political? And it's like, mate, get a grip.
Yeah, she does. I don't like to joke about it, but she does seem to be having something of a rather public breakdown.
Yeah. Look, she was a highly deployed weapon for the Labour Party in the election campaign.
Quite right.
I mean, I know Polly McKenzie on some other podcast, I don't know what it's called, has joked that she's the Lib Dem sleeper agent.
That's a joke that's been going around a while in the Lib Dems. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
But she was, if so, she was also deployed by the Labour Party very skillfully, because she is the byword for messing up the economy.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've always sort of been reticent about saying something that happened all that time ago still having an impact now, but whatever the reality, you're totally right about how people perceive her.
Not all that time ago, it's less than 2 years.
Yeah, it's in political terms and quite a long time ago, but yes.
In economic terms, 2 years is nothing.
Well, maybe, but quite a lot has happened since then. But anyway, the point is, you're absolutely right that that's how she's been deployed. That's how she's perceived. And whatever the economic reality, that's just how she is perceived. That's just a fact. You know, you ask people about Liz Truss, they say messed up the economy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Liz Truss messed up the economy. Boris Johnson, Partygate.
Yep.
Rishi Sunak, useless.
Yeah, but I suspect that's right.
I mean, I think that's the thing. You know, politics is painted in primary colours.
Yeah. And inevitably that will happen to Sir Keir Starmer, to Rachel Reeves, as time goes on. There's some other stuff in there. So there's the Football Governance Bill, which Tracy Crouch, before she left Parliament, was a very big advocate of. That was in the King's speech. There was actually, and I...
Rishi Sunak's smoking thing was, yes, in there as well.
Yes, I noticed that. It's kind of interesting how much old legislation they picked up. Were you a bit disappointed? I mean, it's not exactly the most radical kind of forward-thinking thing to do, to pick up a load of old stuff, although maybe I like some of it.
I mean, it depends whether you think it's any good. I don't have a problem. If there's a whole load of pre-prepared legislation that's not bad legislation, that is ready to go and has just been dropped because the party that was pushing it has lost power, then I don't think there's a bad thing in saying, actually, this is all right, we'll do this, let's push it through. It's ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Football Governance Bill had quite a lot going for it. You and I think, discussed at the time the weirdness of the tobacco and vapes bill.
Yeah.
And the sort of funniness of that. Yeah, but anyway, and obviously there's conversion practices in there as well. Stuff we've been talking to about for a long time.
Yeah, the conversion practices is interesting. There are a lot of carve-outs in it, because they have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are complicated questions about the role of a therapist,
right,
not a religious practitioner necessarily, but a therapist, in helping somebody to explore either their gender identity or their sexuality, which are two different things and unfortunately have been conflated.
Mm.
And how you draft legislation that allows watchful waiting for younger people, exploration rather than saying, well, any exploration is questioning. Questioning is conversion therapy.
Yeah, because basically what you don't want is to, for a young person in particular, but anyone in theory, to go to a therapist of some kind and say, I think I might be trans, can we talk about that? I might be gay, whatever. So yeah, you obviously don't want to be in a situation where a therapist feels unable to help someone because they're going to be convicted in some way. It's a really fine line to balance.
Yeah, and I think the issue is not like whether therapists will be convicted, but what the chilling effect might be, all of these things. And yeah. It's so hard because these are highly emotive issues on all sides, and everyone's talking about bringing the toxicity of the debate down, and God, I hope that happens. The problem is that both sides think the other lot are being toxic and vicious and out of order and bigoted. And if you cannot go, yeah, okay, here's the common ground we have and here's how we'll talk about it, and no one seems to be doing that yet, then it just carries on being painful and nasty for all people concerned.
Plus, of course, at the centre of this, you want young people who might need mental health support and services or other kind of care to work through these issues to be given that properly.
Well, absolutely. I think the one thing everybody can agree on is that what we need is more mental health support for people who are either gender questioning or struggling with their sexuality. I think in terms of struggling with sexuality, we may be in a world, I hope we're in a world, where that feels like it happens less because there is far more acceptance. But that does not to say it doesn't happen at all. And there are certainly communities where that is going to be particularly hard. Mm. So, yeah, more mental health support, making sure that you know, we are responding in an evidence-led way to what works and making sure that people grow up as happy as they can in whatever way that means for them.
And are looked after properly when they hit those initial challenges. There's a bill in this King's Speech that I believe is called the Emma Bunnell Bill, the English Devolution Bill.
Yay!
Which I know is a particular
subsidiarity favorite. Subsidiarity! Yeah, right.
There we go. There's also the Lisa and Andy bill, the Better Buses bill.
That's the Luke Rakes bill. There you go, Luke. You've got a shout out on my podcast at last. Luke Rakes is the Deputy General Secretary of Fabian Society.
Surely.
And has written a lot about, with it. I always joke that the one word I hear from him more than any other is buses.
Surely that's the Lisa and Andy loves a bus.
Lisa and Andy does love a bus. And when she was CLG, a lot of this was going through in terms of
and her leadership
policy.
Campaign.
And her leadership campaign. But this work, a lot of this is in a big report that Luke did for the Fabians, the Commission on Devolution and Regional Equality.
Declare your bias, please.
I work for the Fabian Society.
You are a big lover of Fabians and their work and a big promoter of them.
Yeah, and I've been a member of the Fabian Society for over 20 years, well, and I've only worked for them this time around for 3.
But I suppose this is the thing about being in power. All the things you talk about out of power suddenly can be done.
Exactly. That's the point. You don't win elections in order to win elections. You win elections in order to do stuff.
I'm feeling very generous. It's a very sunny Friday morning, so I'm going to feel generous. And I'm going to say the same about this King's speech as I said to you about the manifesto. Do you remember when the manifesto first was announced? Everyone was like, oh, this is a bit of a damp squib. Why aren't Labour being more radical? And part of the reason for that was because we'd heard about it before. And, you know, Starmer had been building up for 6-9 months to some of the stuff that was in the manifesto. And, of course, this King's speech, it had been built up during the election campaign. So none of it feels new. But I have to be honest, there's stuff in here that if we were just hearing it for the first time, I think some people would be saying this is quite radical.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and this is as true of the Mony left as it is of the centrist dads.
I confess, I was thinking more of the Mony left at that point.
If this manifesto had Jeremy Corbyn's picture plastered on the front of it, and had come out of nowhere like the 2019 manifesto did, by necessity, to be fair to the 2019 manifesto, because yeah, so did the election. I think people would be really happy with it, you know, nationalising the railways, you know, criminalising water company bosses who fail.
Yeah, water company was the one I was going to mention. Actually, there's quite a lot of water company stuff in there.
You know, really radical devolution, really radical house building, really radical planning reform. All of these things are pretty radical, but what Starmer's done really well is make them not seem radical. And I think where the difference on the left at the moment kind of sits, because this is not in any way a New Labour King speech. There are two things that are absolutely...
It's become so trite. It's either Corbynite or New Labour. There are other distinctions in the world.
But the reason I say that is because this is the state is back. And class is back. And to both of those things were things New Labour never really talked about. They did use the state, but they used it by stealth.
Yeah.
And they never talked about class.
No.
And I think that the key difference, ironically, between Jeremy Corbyn and Keir Starmer is not so much a policy agenda. I mean, it is a bit on foreign policy, absolutely, and security.
Mm.
But it's like Jeremy Corbyn had quite a sort of socially democratic manifesto, but presented it as mass radicalism. Here, Starmer has quite a socially democratic manifesto and presents it as stability.
That's a very interesting point. Yeah, I think you may well be onto something there. I'm really excited that I'm going to be able to spend the next 4/5 years talking of getting really libertarian with you and talk about the growing presence of the state. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I'm sure you will. I think libertarians are children who haven't grown up yet. So I enjoy saying that to you very often.
Well, we'll look forward to it. There's going to be a lot to come from this, because it's all very well putting out a King's speech. The proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating. Of course, with a stonking great majority, that makes the meal rather easier to consume.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting one to watch. We've got obviously the first Labour conference back in government coming up in the not too distant future.
Yeah. Yes, we have.
If anyone needs anything for that, Emma's got loads of free time, so she'd love to talk. She's shooting daggers at me. I just want to touch on one final thing before we finish. There's always that moment before the King's speech where parliamentarians from different sides shuffle through together and do that rather awkward walk between the Commons and the Lords. I have to say, the behaviour of Rishi Sunak and the other Conservatives since they lost power has been rather impeccable, and I wish they'd blooming done it when they were in government instead of that sort of rather naff way that they often behaved. There was really nice moments between Sir Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak waiting around in the Commons. Sunak has been very pleasant and statesmanlike from the dispatch box. First of all, it's rather nice when you see politics from the other side of the Atlantic. It's rather nice that we can behave in this manner. And perhaps people will learn that that is also the way to behave in government.
We shall see. There are ideological differences. We should have a Barney about them, but I think that whatever their differences politically between Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer, I think Keir Starmer didn't feel about Rishi Sunak the way he feels about Boris Johnson.
And of course, the way the Conservative leaders felt about Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah. So I think that the absolute lack of propriety of Johnson, I don't think you'd have seen those kinds of scenes if he'd still been leader. But I think that the kind of, you know, Rishi Sunak, wrong on a lot of things, but wrong within bounds, as it were.
Yeah, and it was always that bit where he pushed the boundaries and was behaving in that more Boris Johnson way that always bothered me, right? Because he should have behaved, anyway, behaved more this way. But it's been very nice to see. And I think you're quite right about the personal animus has gone. Because you know, as you and I prove every week, you can have a Barney about the politics, but be personable and, you know, love each other dearly as we do.
Absolutely. I mean, we are yet, of course, to see who the Conservatives opt for if they put Suella Braverman in charge, which it doesn't look like they're going to be fair. We may take back all our words, but let's see what happens by the autumn.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think we will be coming to the Conservative leadership election in the not too distant future. But obviously, this was King's Speech week. Thank you for joining me to go through it all. That was it was an interesting kind of, well, I know you love a legislative deep dive, so this is
absolutely this is my happy place.
Yeah, this is your happy place. I hope House of Commons is your happy place, dear listener. Emma, tell people where they can keep up with you away from this show.
So I'm on Twitter at @EmmaBurnell_, and you can read my newsletter Hard Thinking on the Soft Left on Substack.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media, and head over to theaddition.net for blog posts, more podcasts and my newsletter. If you want more episodes from this show and both those newsletters, we have a stonking bargain for you. Sometime after the summer, we're going to have to stop being so generous with this bargain and put up the price. So grab it while you can. Just £5 a month for all of that stuff. You need to go to patreon.com/House of Comments Podcast for that. We will see you next week.